You're listening to CircCRM.com's Voices of CRM podcast for May 1st. I'm Barney Beal, news editor on the site. Today we're talking with Paul Greenberg, a noted industry expert and president of the 56 Group, a CRM consultancy in Virginia. Paul is also the author of CRM at the Speed of Light, now in its third edition, and a site expert on CircCRM.com. His blog, P. Green Blog, was named the top CRM blog of 2006 by our readers. Paul is also a rabid Yankees fan, but we're not going to hold that against him. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for joining us. You've been covering this market for quite a while now. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in CRM? What brought you to it in the first place? Was it chance, vision?
I'd love to say it was vision, but it was, you know, chancy vision, really. I accidentally came upon it while studying to figure out where to go. I was executive vice president of a small consulting company that actually focused around ERP, but I recognized that the market was going somewhere else entirely. And I came across this thing that I started reading was called XRP, which stood for Extended ERP, which of course tells you how CRM was looked at in the earlier days. And it said, you know, we deal with sales, marketing, and all these people-facing kind of technologies and systems and so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good idea. And I figured that the way I could learn about it, actually understand it, was begin to research and study and write a book. And that's exactly what I did. And it intrigued me to the point here I am today talking to you 6 years later.
Well, Paul, we've also seen a number of waves in CRM with the emergence and eventual acquisition of Siebel at the hands of Oracle, the well-publicized failures of 4 or 5 years ago, to the emergence of the hosted and the on-demand applications. Is there another wave coming? I mean, what can we expect in the future?
Well, there's two or three things, really. The fundamental, though, is this. We've moved into an entirely new business ecosystem. We historically, within the world of CRM and within the world of business, have been in a corporate ecosystem where value resided with products and services and, you know, corporate perks to customers and loyalty programs per se and so on and so forth. But now, because of the transformation, primarily due to the internet, but due to just a change in generations of customers due to a set of requirements and volatility that customers didn't have in the past, we've moved into what you would have to call in the business universe a customer ecosystem, meaning that the customer sits at the hub of it, that the value resides not with product services in the company anymore, but with that customer. Consequently, because the products and services to the customer are something they could get pretty much in multiple places anywhere around the globe, and things like logistics and delivery, because of improved technology and transformations of the world, are less of an issue than they ever were anywhere in the world. For example, I got something from Amazon UK in 3 days at one point. Because of the reduction in cost, so to speak, of change or transformation, customers now say, okay, well, look, your products and services, I can get them anywhere. What I want is I want to have a experience with you that makes me want to advocate your company, that makes me want to advocate your products and services, that allows me to create value that's meaningful to me as a customer with you, so that you, company, are not just a producer of products and services, but are an aggregator of things like tools and communities and those things I need as a customer to create value that's meaningful to me, and thus, in return, I'll provide value meaningful to you, so that the customer experience becomes the core of any sort of CRM universe.
And have you seen companies taking advantage or riding this wave so far?
Yeah, well, actually, there's multiple companies and entire industries in a smaller sense that are beginning to at least prototypically take advantage. For example, you're dealing with the PC video game market. PC video game market did a brilliant job, and they did it earlier than anyone else in 1996 when the first-person shooter game Doom was released by John Carmack and ID Software. What happened at that point was some kid, who in effect created a revolution here, some kid hacked the game. Why? Not because he wanted to make money, not because he wanted to steal anything, but because he wanted to create a version of the game that was meaningful to him. Carmack said, this is great. I'm going to embrace this hacker. I'm going to give him my source code. I'm going to let them program it personally the way they want, because then they'll buy the games. Because they'll not just buy it for the game, they'll buy it for the code so they can personalize the experience that they're having with the game. Unlike Sony, who when they put out the PSP, found that somebody had hacked it so that they could create an internet browser, and Sony said, okay, tell you what, we'll give you an internet browser, but then we're going to shut down any ability to hack this whatsoever. And consequently, as good a piece of hardware as the PSP is, there's a lack of software. It's lagging in the movie business right now, and it hasn't done as well as expected because Sony has such a engineering-focused culture where the PC video game which is, world is going to have a $55 billion customer-centered culture by the year 2009. In the big guy world, so to speak, as opposed to the 16, 18, and 20-year-old kid world and the 35 and 50-year-olds like me who play games, in the big guy world, you've got sort of a left toe in the water kind of attempt at the new customer experience mode. I mean, we have the obvious, you know, Starbucks and Apple who have focused around lifestyle as a sort of take the old business logic, begin to transform it to kind of a new approach around an experience, which is why you can charge $4.50 for a cup of coffee. And at the second, but on the second hand, you have things like Procter & Gamble who, when they need to solve a scientific problem, they don't just use an internal research staff, but instead they'll actually go out to a innovation community, or innovators community, an inventors community of 80,000 scientists who they will put out their internal problems, issues, requirements, and scientific needs. And when somebody in that community solves them, they pay them. So that they have a collaborative relationship with their own customers and their own scientists and their own communities that effectively extend their capabilities and allow the customers and the inventors and the scientists to produce something of value that provides value both to Procter & Gamble and to the inventors.
So they're turning their customers and these communities into a sort of competitive advantage, aren't they?
Yeah, in effect. I mean, under an old business logic, that's the way it does work, actually. You do end up with minimally a competitive advantage. But keep in mind one thing. In the world we're living in right now, the business logic is broken. We don't just live in a mere customer ecosystem. We live in what I call the era of the social customer, where the customer's demand is collaborative value. Right? How do you co-create value with a company that's meaningful to you? And meaningful does not mean just revenue-driven, by the way. For a customer, it could be a thing of beauty. It can be an experience that they'll remember the rest of their lives. It can be something dramatic. It can be something exciting. Look, part of the, I'll give you a good example when we're back to that PC video game thing. When you're creating modifications, they call it the mod community, you can go on and you will find forums where thousands of people are participating in the discussion of the modification. And the net result will be the modification, but the discussion, the creation, the enhancement of the tools, the conferences, the back and forth on the in the user forums, the and communities are actually part of the experience as much as the ultimate end product. And that it's the entire experience that's meaningful, not just the product that gets produced.
Well, considering that, I mean, here you are talking on a podcast, you've got your own blog. How can CRM practitioners take advantage of some of this new media?
Well, the first thing I would totally always recommend is that they create the blogs, but understand that they're not creating marketing collateral. I mean, the blogosphere really is a world unto itself. I mean, Technorati has been, of course, the kind of blog watchers that are most important in the blog world. And they actually, it's interesting, when I began my blog in June of 2005, Technorati was tracking 14 million blogs. Now, less than a year later, they're tracking 37 million blogs. And, you know, the interesting thing you find when you blog is as long as you're willing to provide a true voice, meaning as a business, you're not just putting forward a bunch of marketing collateral, but you're willing to provide transparency, meaning expose some of the things that are going on internally so that your readers will actually get a feeling that they're participating in what you're going through, you'll find a great deal of success. If you just market you're going to find that you'll fail miserably and, in fact, will be slammed by the people who are doing it. So there's a lot of risk in doing a blog. I mean, one of the most successful blogs, even though I don't find it a great read, is Fastlane by General Motors, which is run by the vice chairman of General Motors, Bob Lutz. But GM has actually understood another thing, even though they're obviously in other kinds of trouble right now. GM has understood another thing, which is that that's not good enough. This guy's the vice chairman. You know, he's talking about their new cars and some of the issues that had come up while they were developing them, and that's all interesting and well and good. But GM is now going to open up an employee's blog, meaning it's written by employees, and they're going to, on the positive side, what they're going to do is allow those employees to actually have some creative freedom in and transparency in giving out information to the public who can read these blogs. On the other hand, you have Sony, who I read, once again, was doing blogs and user forums, and then all of a sudden I'm finding out that they will permanently ban anyone from using their user forums, not their blogs in this case, their user forums, if they disagree in the direction that Sony's going in Sony Online Entertainment. They've even banned one of their own developers from saying anything bad about the company. I mean, so, you know, Sony is everything that a company shouldn't be, where GM is at least attempting to do the right thing and utilize the kind of tool that has been exceptionally powerful and has created essentially a new media branch, you know, which is the citizen, not the citizen journalist, that's really not what this is. This is just the citizen social connection with the rest of the world.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit. You've talked a bit in the past about CRM as a platform, and that's something we're sort of seeing now with Salesforce.com and their AppExchange. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, now, I would really want to expand that. I mean, these are enterprise companies who are really beginning to think more in terms of becoming a ubiquitous kind of platform. The idea is that you've got certain group of companies, and I would say that they kind of group in different ways. You've got Salesforce.com and AppExchange as kind of their extended network. You've got SAP using NetWeaver and what they're going to be calling their enterprise service architecture in 2007. You've got Reardon Commerce, who has a fully extended service-oriented architecture with a platform now and is actually probably the most complete. Plus, you have Google and Yahoo, who are understanding from the more cultural side the idea of service as a platform. The fundamental principle that all those companies are aiming to dominate, the fundamental thing that they're attempting to do, is to seize the marketplace and become the foundation for how you live your life, meaning you use a cell phone, mobile services will be on their platform. You go to your house, you watch your media, the media services will be on their platform. You go to work, you sit down at your desktop using a highly effective service-oriented architecture, everything via the web, the platform that you're using will be their platform. This is a battle that they're waging because they understand that, you know, traditional software and even traditional on-demand now, which, you know, is only like 2 or 3 years old, traditional on-demand will not be the ultimate victory. The ultimate victory, which I don't think any one of these companies will win per se. I think there'll be several platforms which can talk to each other. You know, the ultimate victory will be the company with the best, the companies with the best service-oriented architectures that have the best ability to tie business rules and the technology together so that people get what they need, the experience they need in real time. And that's really going to be the key to it all in whatever form they need it, meaning it could be, as I said, PC, TV, or cell phone.
Okay, Paul, you've also been doing some work with training recently. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's going, what you've seen in terms of change in the industry, and, I mean, do you think that CRM needs some sort of formal certification process?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually been kind of my passion in recent months and over the last year. In partnership with Bruce Culbert, who's the former head of global services of Salesforce, the former SVP of CRM and supply chain for Bearing Point, the guy who created IBM e-commerce. Bruce and I formed a company we call BPT Partners, which is a CRM-focused training company, but it starts from the principle that value does reside in the customer. And here's what was interesting. We tested the marketplace with a tour, the way we announced the company in October. And we went to 8 cities, 6 in the U.S. plus Singapore and Hong Kong. And the response was just phenomenal. The hunger for understanding the core value of, you know, customer value and how you apply strategies associated with that is huge. I mean, we found, for example, in city after city that most of the people who came to that city weren't from that city. Like, for example, when we were in Singapore, we had people from 6 countries who flew in to be at that meeting. When we were in Boston, I, of course, being a fanatic Yankees fan, as you well know, decided I was going to rag on the audience and go after the Red Sox fans. So I asked, of the 42 people in the audience, how many of you are from Boston? 5 raised their hand. They had flown in from all over the place. These are major companies. Schneider Trucking, $3.5 billion. John Hancock, Giorgio Armani, David's Bridal. I mean, you name it. These companies are hungering to understand how they actually should work with their customers. One of the problems we kept finding, of course, though, is that there is no actual certification standard for CRM. So what we're providing, in fact, is not a certification in a formal sense. It's a certificate, a professional certificate that's actually endorsed by, because the program was vetted by, the Rutgers CRM Research Center, the CRM Association of North America, Greater China CRM, and CRM Guru. And the thing is that's interesting about this, though, is that it points out every time we do this course that we do need an actual certification standard CRM. The big problem is that the industry is so busy and is undergoing such major transformation and is so utterly competitive in sort of ironic sense that no one seems to find the time to actually build a standard. We've actually made a couple of abortive attempts at it already. So, I'm thinking that there will be a certification standard at some point. In the meantime, we're doing the best we can to meet the need that is just huge. I mean, we're getting requests for custom training to build at different companies from all over the place. It's just really, we tapped into something that's dramatic.
Well, Paul, I really appreciate you taking the time with us today. Before I let you go, just have one more question. Do you really think that the Yankees, with the pitching staff as it's currently constituted, has a chance to make a real run at a World Series? Aren't there too many age and injury concerns?
That's a great question, actually. Well, let me put it this way. Randy Johnson, Mike Mussina have made 11 starts. They've had one bad start total between them. Octavio Dotel, middle innings reliever, will be back in about a month. Aaron Small will be back next week. Carl Pavano will be back in June. Yet, we got a fairly old pitching staff, but we've covered all bases. We've got good middle relief. We've got Mariano Rivera. We've got enough pitching for the offense to carry us straight through the World Series. So the answer is, of course, yes, we do.
All right, well, we'll have to check back with you in October. Thanks
Fair
very
enough.
Much.
Thank you, Barney.
Michael.
Take care, my friend.
Well, that wraps up our conversation with Paul. We'll be back next month with another voice in the CRM market. Until then, please continue to turn to searchcrm.com for all the latest industry news, advice, and resources to help make managing your customer relationships a success.